He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I feel like a foreigner. Bright, sunny, dry, sick, cold out there. What is it where you are? Absolutely frigid here in Midtown Manhattan. Getting warmer. It was 4 degrees, but feeling like minus 11 when I came to work. Now it's inched up to 7 or 8 degrees. My 77 WABC radio sidekick, Noam Layden, millions of you stayed home today. Perfect day for it. Especially if you're like the 35% of American workers getting paid a paid vacation day. How sweet. Especially today. I mean, just stay inside. Cuddle. Good day for cuddling. No mail delivery. Most banks and federal offices are closed if you're just hanging around. On this Monday, which celebrates the birth of our first commander-in-chief, honors the 43 who followed him. Give me a call, 866-RELDO. What's on your mind? Before I get to the news of the day, and there's plenty of it, you have to excuse me if I'm distracted. Tonight, the live finale of Celebrity Apprentice, Long Strange Trip, began almost a year ago, ends this evening. A live show on NBC beginning at 8 p.m. But right now, let's talk about something much more relevant in your lives, the weather. Bill Evans, the crack meteorologist for 77, or rather Channel 7 Eyewitness News, with us here. Hey, Bill, so, you know, man, oh, man.
I will say, there's nothing more pertinent than watching The Apprentice tonight, because I'm stoked, man. There you go.
That'll heat things up.
I'm waiting for you to win.
All right, I appreciate that. But what is it? Is this a polar vortex? No, right? It's just a big high pressure?
Yeah, it's just a blast of cold air, you know, coming through. It actually, you know, what happens is we've had these series of little lows, these little clippers that go by from the Great Lakes. And so when a clipper goes by, it pulls cold air out of Canada and out of, you know, the Arctic, right down into the area. And so we've had a series of them going by, and it's been a really bizarre winter as far as that goes, because we never get many of those. And that's all we've had so far this winter, is those little clippers going by. They go out into the Atlantic, they get enhanced, and they throw back all this snow. I mean, for us, we have not had that much. When the models said that we were going to get some, we got none, and Boston got everything. I mean, they have had every clipper go out into the Atlantic, blow up into a major storm and dump snow on them. Well, we're going to just get the cold out of that. We get the remnants off of that. We get the cold air coming in out of the north. So today's wind chills will still be around 5 in the city today to about 10 below this afternoon. Now, that does get us ready for this next system coming. Now, the next system coming is out of the Gulf of Mexico. So that's a totally different animal. It's coming up with a ton of moisture out of the Gulf. It's producing snow now in Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. You know, they don't really see snow much down there. They think the grits factory has exploded, that kind of thing. But what we're going to be seeing is snow coming in for the morning commute tomorrow. Not a lot. We're going to be on the northern fringes of it. But it'll be about 1 to 3 inches of snow. That could be enough to make the roadways, you know, kind of treacherous for the travel tomorrow morning's commute, people getting back to work and back to school.
Bill Evans, Channel 7's crack meteorologist. Is it too cold here to snow? Is that an old wives' tale?
That's very true. You're right. The atmosphere can be too cold to snow. Once you get the temperature way down there in the teens and single digits, the atmosphere, you know, once the moisture comes up, the atmosphere is so cold, it just dries out. So that is a true saying, that it's too cold to snow. You got to have snow from around 22 to 32 degrees. You can maybe even get as low here as 20 because we're so close to the Atlantic Ocean. But yes, that's true. It's right on the border of that tomorrow. The snow's going to be a very fine, powdery snow around the area, and a lot of it won't get down to the ground. It will not make it. So I think that's why we keep our snow accumulations very low.
And finally, Bill Evans, you have a situation where last year we had such huge snow accumulations. This year, not so much. What does all this say about global warming, if anything?
Well, I think it's just nothing. I mean, the planet really hasn't warmed, as we saw from all the stats that came out. They manipulated the readings and they manipulated the data, and it doesn't say anything about global warming. The planet hasn't warmed since really the beginning of this century. So what it tells us is the polar vortex is more in control. you know, the climate is always changing, so we do have climate change. But, you know, we've had you know, very, very cold temperatures across the North America. We're actually colder, you know, by about a half a degree or so over the last 10 years. So, you know, is the climate changing? Yes, the climate changes all the time. Is this global warming? No. Is carbon affecting atmosphere? We don't know that. It is carbon-13, carbon-14, that molecule is in the atmosphere. You know, it doesn't look to be showing any effects right now, although the carbon is there, but we don't think that that's a big warming gas. So what we're seeing is just, you know, nice changes in weather. It's great to talk about, but you got to be very careful with it.
Bill Evans, Chief Meteorologist, WABC Eyewitness News. Thanks, mate. I appreciate
it,
Bill.
Thanks for having me, man. Good luck tonight.
All right, thanks. Thank you very much. Stay warm. So, folks, this frigid day, I can barely get my lips to move. We'll talk more weather maybe later. And whether I'll win tonight, I mean, we started with 16 contestants the first week of January, now down to two, me and Lisa. Lisa, the longtime host of programs like Entertainment Tonight. I love her. She's been a tough but very fair opponent, unlike the creeps. Not creeps. I mean, Lorenzo and Ian and Kevin Jonas. I mean, they're punk. No. They were all right. But they're gone. I'm still there. But there's plenty of real news to talk about today. Most of it is grim. I want to be talking and writing about the beheading of the Christians in Libya and Egypt's retaliation. I mean, that's what we need. Jordan to retaliate. We need Egypt to retaliate. We need these Sunni Muslim countries to go after these Sunni Muslim extremists who are performing acts of atrocity that are so reminiscent of the Nazis. And speaking of the Nazis, I have to talk about what Bibi Netanyahu is saying. He's made a dramatic call. You probably have heard that, for European Jews to leave Europe, to give up on Europe with this rising tide of anti-Semitism, to immigrate to Israel. The world, I think, folks, is a sorry place if Bibi is right. And Israel is the only place in the world where Jews can feel truly safe. I mean, what about here? What about Britain? I know the melancholy fact of life is that there's a deep-rooted primal hatred of Jews that is undeniable, and it simmers just below the thin surface of European society, European civilization. It's an awesomely scary, undeniable, age-old phenomenon. We'll talk more about it. First call of the day is Chris in Jersey, 866 Geraldo. What are you thinking about, Chris? What's on your mind, buddy?
First of all, how'd your mom do with the operation?
Oh, thanks so much for asking. If you check out my Facebook, mom really has been unbelievably resilient. My 95-year-old mom, she fell, she broke her hip, she had a hip replacement. She's doing great. She's already up and walking around. Not walking around, I don't want to overstate, but she's moving. She's on a good track. My sister Sharon now is in the hospital. They think she had a stroke. She's the one who's the prime caretaker for my mom, but It comes in waves. Everybody's got something to deal with. But what's on your mind, big picture, Chris?
Well, the decapitations. And here's a question. It might be a little long-winded, so bear with me.
Go ahead.
At what point in Muslim society do, in general, they realize the way we did here in America with white society, and not to, you know, I'm not trying to be racist, back in the 50s and 60s where we had segregation, and as a community, we realized this was wrong, it had to be fixed, and white America rallied to help African-American America. At what point does the Muslim community realize that, hey, it's got to be us or them? We have to start coming out and speaking out against what's happening within our community, against these radicals. I just don't see that, because until that happens, everyone's going to be suspicious or hesitant to really feel comfortable with that community. And
I agree with you, man, and I think it is undeniable. I mean, let me say a couple of things, and I appreciate the call. 866-RELDO, the number, 866-437-2536. Here's the thing about Muslim reaction to these horrible Muslim extremists, Sunni Muslim extremist acts. I think... It is fair to say, as a society, have been lax in terms of our reaction to the death of those three Muslim honor students at the University of North Carolina last week. The 19-year-old, the 23-year-old, the 21-year-old shot in the head by that neighbor. If those three Muslim kids had been Christians or Jews or gays or blacks, they would have been a much more emotional, passionate reaction to that atrocity at the University of North Carolina. So we've been lax in that single incident. But generally speaking, ever since 9/11 and including 9/11, the reaction from the Sunni Muslim moderates has been muted at best. And I think it's shameful how muted it has been. We have to speak out. They have to speak out. We have to condemn the extremists. I think the president was late in terms of the University of North Carolina atrocity. I think Bibi is on the right track when he talks about the danger, the peril to European Jews, although he may be overstating. And I would hate to think that Jews have to flee from Europe. You know, it's not World War II. The Nazis don't rule. You've got a couple of freaks doing some terrible deeds, but I don't think that most Jews in Europe feel that they are besieged. I hope not. And in any case, even if France is inhospitable, and I'm sure lots of French would deny that, but even if France is inhospitable, even Germany now, I don't know, the weird thing of Jews going back to live in Germany, but I mean, there's always the United States. I always thought that the United States should incorporate Israel, make it the United States and Israel. So any attack on Israel would be an attack on the United States, literally. But I don't think the world is where it was in 1938, 1939, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45. I don't think we'll ever go back to those dark days. But and I think that Bibi is overstating the peril. I mean, for his own political reasons, he's a very political animal. But there's no doubt that there is a deep-seated anti-Semitism that's wacky. And I don't know how you even explain that to your children if you happen to be Jewish, that there's a whole bunch of people who just hate you so much they just want to kill you. But I want to hear from you on this frigid day. My goodness, the day of Celebrity Apprentice, the finale. Lisa Gibbons, who's my wonderful opponent tonight. She's a dear friend. I've known her for years. She's been so honorable. She's been wonderful. So she's going to be joining us at 11:35. We've got a lot to talk about. We'll have a terrorism expert in here to talk about those beheadings of the Christians and how the Pope and the Christian community is going to respond to that. Bravo to Egypt and the new president, Sisi, for taking on those militants. He's bombing in Libya now as Jordan is bombing in Syria and Iraq. It has to happen. I've got to take a break. I'll be back 18 after 10 o'clock.
High school reunion, a high school that is almost all white. And, you know, earlier tonight, when I was walking the red carpet that I have at home, I was thinking, how do you possibly, in just 3.5 hours, honor all of the hundreds of people who have passed through the portals of SNL? Here's how. We leave them out. Make them feel that their lives don't matter.
All right, Steve Martin. Sort of funny. A great show. I didn't really see it. You saw it, Marty?
It was great. Geraldo, I think it'll be remembered as the greatest comedy reunion ever. Not only all the old cast members, but Hollywood stars. I mean, Jack Nicholson, De Niro, Jim Carrey, Jerry Seinfeld, Eddie Murphy, who hadn't been back to the Saturday Night Live set in 30 years. There was some incredibly, incredibly funny stuff. And what was interesting is you felt like you were seeing your life before you.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good life. You know, it was really pretty
funny.
Well,
I was stuck. I had to get into town because of Celebrity Apprentice, and I got on a plane in Sarasota, you know, got my mom all taken care of down there. Erica's still there. I hope she makes it out. But I had to get back. Yeah, I had to make sure I get back. So I got on the nonstop flight from Sarasota. It was supposed to leave at 5:30. And we got on the plane at 6:30. At 7:30, we taxi out to the runway. The pilot gets on the PA system and announces that he can't fly because they're overtime. So they turned around and came back. No flights anymore coming out of Sarasota. I was going to run to grab a cab to get to Tampa to fly from Tampa. I ran past the gate. They were just closing the door on a flight to Atlanta. Got on that flight to Atlanta. Got a flight to LaGuardia last night. So I got home like 6 hours late. So I'm working tonight on 4 hours sleep. But that's okay. It's live. Got to rise to the occasion. 50 Shades of Grey talking about rising to the occasion. $90.7 million between Thursday night and Monday. It cost $40 million to make the S&M movie. Made an additional $158 million overseas. The biggest opening ever on President's Day weekend. Biggest R-rated movie in forever. So I think it's going to lead to a whole new trend about S&M sex. I don't know. Okay, what's on your mind today? I'm sure it's not S&M. Here's Ted in Connecticut. Thanks for calling, Ted. What's up? Hey, Ted, you there, buddy? All right, snooze, you lose. Sorry. Ferris, our buddy in Fairfield. What's up, Ferris?
What do you say, Geraldo? Had to think of you last night in watching that SNL 40th anniversary special. What a great show it was. We saw your face in the reruns. And I was given the book in hardcover and in softcover, the Saturday Night Live, the first 20 years. And what a great publication that was. I don't know if you saw it, but I'm holding it now in my formerly gray-stained fingers.
Okay. Ferris, I got to let you go. It's beautiful, beautiful reminiscing here. It's Peter in Brooklyn. What's up, Peter?
Hi, about the Prime Minister of Israel's uninvited visit to the United States. Hey, a lot of African-American politicians and African-Americans in general see the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu. This is a disrespect to our black president. This is the first black president we had, and he would be the first foreign leader to defy the White House, and then come into the very city where the president's going to be and disrespect the president. African Americans see this as a disrespectful, racist affront to black Americans.
I got it. A little harsh, but I understand it. Thank you very much. Richard in New York. What's up, Richard? Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Listen, I think you're going to win tonight, but I hate to say this. I think the fix has been in since the beginning for you to win. Because your ego wouldn't let you lose.
So, come on.
Come on. Your contract probably has you as a winner. you are no way going to go down the tubes on this.
Thank you. Thanks, Richard. I hope you're right. I hope Donald Trump's listening. Big basketball game over the weekend. The All-Stars played here. But I know, you know, All-Stars just for fun. But big Nets, Knicks news. They need some big news. Amari Stoudemire's career is over. The big man I thought would be a great mix with Carmelo Anthony is gone. Guns, Mike Gunzelman, the sports maven for 77 WABC, is here. He was at the game. First of all, do you like All-Star games, Mike?
No, because you can tell they don't really try. I mean, the Pro Bowl for NFL is probably the worst thing you've ever seen in your life.
Awful.
And baseball, it used to matter because if you were a Yankee fan, you wouldn't ever see any National League players. But now they do the interleague play. They play each other. The Yankees and Mets play each other like 9 times a year already. So it loses the specialty to it.
But yet it's still a hot ticket, right? What were the tickets going for?
Lower level last night, and I saw it firsthand, physically on the ticket, $750.
That's on the ticket?
On the ticket. So
that was what is
face
it when
value,
it's StubHub?
$3,000 plus for going last night.
$3,000 plus. You see any stars?
Yeah, so there were a lot of people from, like, Mayweather there was, Ariana Grande was there, like, Bieber was around all weekend, like, so I saw a lot of stars. Christina Aguilera did the national anthem, Nicki Minaj was there, so you had Jay-Z, of course, was around, Kanye was everywhere, so it was a good weekend. Friday night was the celebrity game downstairs at the Garden, then at Barclays Center, because it was New York, obviously, so where the Brooklyn Nets play, that was the slam dunk competition. And then it went back home to the Garden last night for the actual game.
So what happened to Stoudemire? First of all, why didn't he live up to his, his career potential?
Plagued by injuries. Literally, it's plagued by injuries.
Is it really that? How come it's only losers that get injured?
Well,
I'm serious. When you see a winning team,
right?
You know, I think it's same thing in football. Losing teams are going backwards. That's why they get injured.
Right.
I really believe that.
He really never had anyone to play with, and then
not Carmelo.
Carmelo is a ball hog who doesn't like giving up the ball whatsoever, and that's why Carmelo hasn't. They haven't even gotten the playoffs with Carmelo Anthony since he's been here. The only time he went to the playoffs was when he was in Denver, and that was in the beginning of his career. So Melo, for as much hype as he gets, over the weekend we went to events. He had 4 bodyguards around him. Nobody else had bodyguards around him.
Why? Why does he need
bodyguards? He's just the star. It's kind of crazy because I don't see him as that.
So is Dolan a bad manager? I mean, a bad owner?
Somehow I feel like Dolan owns this whole entire block. So if I say anything bad about him, I very well might lose my job.
This neighborhood.
Yeah. He is bad, yes. I do not think he knows what he's doing. And the other thing is Phil Jackson, and I want to say this on the air because I was saying this over the weekend, but I want to actually get it out there. He comes in here from the Lakers, all right? You know, he's a great coach this whole entire thing. We didn't have, the Knicks did not have a coach after the end of last season. He was on the team, though, as a president. If he really cared about this triangle offense and everything, he should have became the coach. You don't give it to a brand new guy who's a rookie coach. If you really believe in your system, coach it yourself. The players will listen to you. They're not going to listen to a brand new rookie coach. If Phil Jackson really believed in what he was saying, he should have been the coach.
I just can't figure that maybe. I mean, the fact that he decided not to be the coach, the best symptom of what ails New York. But my God, to have such a terrible franchise in the world capital is right. So embarrassing.
They're 10-43. The Knicks have 10 wins on the whole season. Carmelo Anthony announced on Friday that he's probably done for the rest of the season. So you got Carmelo out, and he was the leading scorer. Stoudemire had been a bust all year. He's probably going to go to a playoff contender team, though, as a bench player. I mean, the Knicks very well. You might be watching the worst Knicks team in franchise history.
Ever. Thank God for the Islander.
Right. Yeah.
If it wasn't for the Islanders, we'd be like shut out. We'd be the laughing stock.
This is my first year for WABC radio covering sports, and all the New York teams suck. They're all bad.
The Giants suck.
The Jets, Yankees are going to be awful. It's going to be so bad.
So bad. Mike Gunselman.
Good luck tonight, my man. I'm rooting for you, baby. Let's do this.
Yeah, all right.
Come on now.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Here's Joe in Queens. What's up, Joe? Thanks for calling.
I'm calling because we have been awake just now, awakened as to what's going on. But the State Department has been issuing every year a statement of persecution of religion. And the religion that is persecuted the most is Christianity. And all of a sudden, these people over there in Libya got killed. They've been being, the Christians have been being killed in countries all over the world. Somalia has had the people killed, the nun killed. And Africa, the priest was killed. And
you're right, man. You're absolutely right. Christians have been, in recent years, throughout the Arab world, Christians have been on the front line, and they have been the victims of horrible atrocities. What makes this different, I think, Joe, is that this ISIS-style barbarity, this savagery, where you actually see how they dehumanize their victims. I mean, to line up the Christians the way they did on that beach, I know that coast well. Later on, I'll play some clips from my time there in 2011 when I predicted that with the overthrow of Gaddafi, those militia were going to be anarchistic nihilists, just like that Al-Qaeda at the time. Little did I know that ISIS would take over, as they apparently are. ISIS really is just a new branding for this radical Sunni Muslim extremism. But when they did that, I mean, to these poor Christian victims, at least we saw Egypt striking back. That's what we need. Egypt has to strike back. That military in Egypt is strong. It's U.S. supplied. You know, we have put them on the shelf. I think President Obama made a terrible error in throwing out Mubarak in Egypt. I mean, encouraging Mubarak to be overthrown. He destabilized the whole region with his calls for an Arab Spring and democracy. I think it was very naive, and now we're reaping the awful harvest of that naivety. It is something very distressing to me. I want the Pope to say something now. I want the Christian countries. I don't want a new crusade, but I think that it is very, very important now that the president get this war powers resolution passed, so he can wage war against ISIS, I mean, primarily and initially in Syria and in Iraq. But it is obvious. I mean, they are spreading to Afghanistan now. They are spreading, obviously, to Iraq. You can see that with this atrocity committed against Christians. I'd like to see the Christian nations of the world now expressed their rage at what ISIS is doing and announced their support for the U.S. effort against ISIS. I think the president has a lot to answer for, but that was yesterday. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. We've got to pound them. We've got to destroy them. We've got to kill them. This deed in Denmark, you all heard about it. First, they went after the free speech, the writers, the cartoonists who are having a little, get together in Copenhagen. First, they attacked there. They killed someone there. Then they killed the Jewish security guard at the Jewish center nearby in Copenhagen before the guy was finally shot down by the Danish security. It's awful. You know, we were there with the family last summer just to think that, if you're Jewish, you're being targeted there. I mean, it's just crazy, a crazy world where, I always say that religion has been the justification for so much murder over time. And now these Sunni Muslim extremists using their religion, defaming their own religion, denigrating their own religion, perverting their own religion to go after others. It's just horrifying. Hey, Brian in Jersey, what's up? Thanks for calling, man.
Hello?
Hi, Brian, you're on. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Geraldo. It's Brian Gurney. I'm the former president of the Bergen County Police Chiefs Association.
Hey, welcome. Nice to see you.
Oh, nice to have. Thanks for having me on. I hope your mom's doing well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
One of the concerns that I have is there was a lot of talk about the military equipping of police. You could certainly die just as easily as being shot with a handgun as you can with a rifle. However, the conventional body armor that's used by police will normally stop handgun rounds, but will not stop rifle rounds, and that's the weapon of choice. And as you know, that what we've seen all over the world is that that the police are on the front lines, and they have to be properly equipped, and they have to be properly armed. And I'm just hoping that the media will pick up on this and understand the new responsibility that we do have, and understand what would be restraint and what we need to be able to combat whatever is up to
you. I got you 5x5, Chief. I understand that. I think that we have to separate what the cops do, though, from what the military does. I think on that point, the president is right. I don't like to see on the streets of Bergen County, for instance, I don't want to see armored personnel carriers or that kind of stuff. It just gives the feeling to the inner city hoods that, it's an occupying army. I think it's very, very risky. I want to see more tasers. But I'd like to see a warehouse where that stuff is available if God forbid, it's ever needed. And I want to see training.
I totally understand what you're saying. That equipment should be used in certain situations. I mean, it's, when you're trying to quell perhaps a civil unrest, maybe not so much, but when we're up during the Boston bombing and that when the two troopers got shot and killed out.
No, there are definitely. I got you.
You have to have those assets and resources.
I got you. I got you, Chief. I got you 5x5. Listen, I'm a big police supporter here, but I don't think when you look at the NYPD, ladies and gentlemen, you see very little of that military kind of flavor to what they do. I mean, once in a while when there's a hostage situation or their armed gunmen hold up someplace, that's different, but that's rare. Generally speaking, the cop is very different than the military, and it's not our super equipment that led to no homicides for 12 days. I mean, that streak ended, I understand, over the weekend, but that was a wonderful streak. 12 days in a city of 8.4 million people, no homicide. I mean, that is extraordinary. And that didn't happen because of armored personnel carriers. That happened because I don't know why. I'd love to know why. I mean, the weather played a role, I know, of course. But it wasn't just the weather, because last winter was worse than this winter. And last winter had more murders than this winter. So something happened that I like a lot. But we love cops. We love the job that they do. We love the fact that now there's a rapprochement, a kind of a conciliatory tone to the community-police relationship. I want to encourage that. Give credit where credit is due. I think de Blasio, for all his kind of pinko ideas, has done something right. I mean, the main thing he did right was to hire Bill Bratton as the police commissioner. 48 minutes after 10 o'clock, we'll be back. Lisa Gibbons, my worthy rival, will be joining me live here at 10:35. What's on your mind? So much news out there. So much going on. A lot of it distressing overseas, especially. Not that there isn't some good news. You know, the fact is we are pounding ISIS. Jordan is engaged now. Egypt is getting involved. That's what we need. Here's Stephen Beacon. What's up, Steve? What are you thinking about?
How you doing, Geraldo? Listen, you made me laugh when you said that, you know, Obama made a misstep with his policy with Egypt and Libya. My question to you is, what correct step has this president made in the past 6 years with regards to foreign policy? The reset with Russia, to me, was just hitting the reset button for them to go back to their communistic ways, you know, which is exactly what Hillary...
I can't argue. I can't argue with the man. He's, you know, for all the fact that he has been, and I think it's fair to say triumphant with the U.S. economy... He's done a fantastic job, you've got to admit it, like it or not, with the economy. Unemployment down, the gross domestic product 5% in the third quarter, they tell us now. Unemployment applications are way down. He's done a great job domestically. But man, oh man, has he screwed up royally overseas. I think the caller, Steve, from Beacon, absolutely right. The Arab Spring, a farce and a awful, awful mistake. It took the pressure off, now that area is bleeding to death and killing itself, and it's killing itself along sectarian lines. So, so absolutely distressing. In Staten Island, Raphael, let me squeeze you in there. Dude, what's up?
Hi, Geraldo. The reason the president's asking for authorization is for using our military to attack Assad. He's already doing bombings that aren't doing anything, as our generals, the ones we have left, are telling us. I mean, really, Geraldo.
Want him to bomb Assad at all. Assad is our ally, whether you like him or not. He is a lot like Gaddafi and Mubarak. Rather, the enemy of my enemy. Good morning, everybody. 5 minutes after 11 o'clock on this President's Day, Monday, my... 77 WABC radio sidekick Noam Layden, and millions of you staying home today. We thank Deborah Valentine for stepping into Noam's big shoes. It's a perfect day to stay home, though, especially if you're like the about 35% of American workers who get a paid vacation day today. Nothing like getting paid not to work, especially when it's 7 degrees out. No mail delivery today. Most banks, federal offices closed. You're just hanging around on this Monday, which celebrates the birth of our first commander-in-chief, honors the 43 who have followed him. Give me a call, 866-RUDDLE. Let me know what is on your mind. I tell you what's on my mind, among other things, the airstrikes that Libya is enduring now, thanks to Egypt. Egypt hitting back at neighboring Libya in North Africa, hours after militants there released this horrifying video, a video showing mass beheadings of Egyptian Christian hostages. Now you have Egypt striking back at those savages, those barbarians who have killed the Christians, and their goal is to avenge the bloodshed, to seek retribution from the killers. It is a goal I heartily endorse. Revenge. Avenge those innocent Christian lives. Kill them. Pound them. This is the first time, you should know, that the government in Cairo, Egypt, has publicly acknowledged taking military action in neighboring Libya. It's an area I know well. I almost died there in May 2011. It was an adventure there with the militia as they were taking over from Gaddafi's forces. That was memorialized on Jon Stewart's show. Here's a clip from back in May 2011.
I gotta say, whatever you think about Geraldo Rivera, dude's got major sack. He just placed himself in the middle of a firefight in Libya. You have to expect the guy to start barking orders at the armed revolutionaries.
Tell him not to shoot us. Don't shoot us.
All right, take it easy.
Stop. Take me. Take me in the camera. Take a knee.
Damn! Who died and made Geraldo king of the rebels?
I wish I was king of the Libyan armed forces. You know what I said then? I said then, as I watched the fighting between the militia, which became the Al-Qaeda, which became ISIS, a lot of them were released felons. I mean, thieves, not political activists. They were the scum of Libyan society, and now they are fighting under the black banner of ISIS. Now they are committing these atrocities. I said then that I totally preferred the Gaddafi army and the Gaddafi forces, far more capable as warriors and much better characters than the militia that unfortunately we and the French helped put in power as we destabilized Libya and destabilized much of the Middle East with a wrong-headed approach. We have to let people evolve at their own rate. You know what I'm talking about? The United States can't go to the Middle East and preach the need for Western-style democracy. People have to evolve themselves. They have to figure out what works for them. It is absolutely horrifying how we have totally destabilized the region. Lisa Deftari is a Middle East terror expert. She works on my beloved Fox News off times. Lisa, welcome. What do you think about this the strike by Egypt? Is this meaningful or is this just symbolic, Lisa?
It's both. I think it's very meaningful in the sense that, you know, Egypt didn't even blink an eye and is retaliating. Obviously, we have to look at the number of Egyptians that are now in Libya in the aftermath of the Arab Spring, going there for work, not heeding the warnings of their government about the threats that exist in that very vulnerable, very chaotic society that was created in Libya in the aftermath of their Arab Spring. And I was listening a bit to your intro into our segment, Geraldo, and I disagree a bit about, you know, getting involved, you know, because it's not just for the sake of the people that are there. I do agree that nation building for the sake of the people on the ground should be an organic grassroots movement. But for the sake of our own national security, I mean, this is what people like myself and others were talking about during the time of the Arab Spring, that when these very vulnerable political vacuums are created in that part of the world where these, you know, absolutist monarchist societies have existed for decades. I mean, it's up for grabs. It creates a society where someone or some group that is well-funded and well-organized will come in. And we knew that these groups, these terror organizations that are very well-connected, would swoop right in, and that's exactly what we're seeing play out.
My point, Lisa, was we have created the vacuum by telling Gaddafi that he was persona non grata and that his days were over, the same way we told Assad, the same way we told Mubarak indirectly. I think we destabilized the whole region. I think that the United States played a big role in you know, you may hate the monarchist authoritarian regimes in the Middle East. You may despise their form of government, but there was stability there that now has been replaced by chaos. Don't you agree, Lisa?
I do agree with you. And to that end, we should rewind and go back 36 years to the Iranian Revolution. I think when President Carter, I should say, you know, helped destabilize their government, I mean, that was the beginning of the end of the stability of that
region. I agree with that. I agree with that. Do you think that Egypt is legit, that Egypt will really fight the militants, and is there any government in Libya that can help defend itself?
I think what we're seeing in Egypt and what we saw, if we rewind a bit, what we saw in Egypt when they overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood and they stood up and said, we will not allow what happened in Iran to happen to us, that was a very significant symbolic moment for the region as a whole. And I think what's going on right now with the Jordanians standing up to ISIS, what the Egyptians are doing in standing up to ISIS, what we're seeing even in the proximity, the fact that Saudi Arabia and Egypt are much closer to the Israel government than they've ever been before, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, more than a pro-Zionist type of scenario, it's a silver lining to this very chaotic situation. What we're seeing on the part of the Egyptians, I think they understand exactly what's going on. While we're sitting back and we are differentiating and putting these nuances into play, where this one's a lone wolf terrorist, and this one is homegrown, and this one was Dutch, and this one was French, and this one was American, they're understanding that Ansar al-Sharia that's on the ground in Libya, or these local groups, yes, they are local, but they are linking up to these larger networks, and that is a big threat. So Egypt's not going to stand by and let 21 of their Christians be killed. And again, Egypt is a Muslim country. A Muslim leader, Sisi, is standing up and saying, we will not allow our nationals to be killed. Jordanian, same thing. I mean, ISIS is not just targeting Jews and Christians. This weekend's headlines would suggest as such. We saw in Copenhagen, it was a cartoonist, it was a Jew. We saw the Coptic Christians being killed. But ISIS has really directed its anger towards everyone, whether it's Kurdish or Jew or Christian, Yazidi, cartoonist, journalist, I mean, even Muslims. So, I mean, really, simplistically, the world falls into two groups, whether you're with them or against them. And really, we have to, the United States has to really join in a global effort to stop them. And we're not saying boots on the ground. We're not saying military intervention. But really, there has to be a more comprehensive way to go about this, to stop this, and not just have these single nations going after, their own retaliation.
I agree. Excellent analysis. I appreciate it. Lisa Daftari, thank you so much for being on. Mideast expert. You can see her on Fox News most often. Thank you, Lisa, very much. Okay, what's on your mind here? Here's Ray in Queens. What up, Ray? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, Geraldo, I need to find out what kind of wine have you been drinking at Trump? Because if you think that Obama has helped this economy, you haven't been out in the United States. I'm a truck driver. And let me tell you something. The people that are making this economy work as it is not Obama. It's the people. And when you wake up from your dream world and get out there and talk to the people, you're going to find out why this economy is even doing what it's doing. Have you checked that they wanted to shut down theaters and hubs and retail is dropping because they can't get the merchandise and people ain't buying? You better check.
All right, Ray, I got it. I got it. I travel more than most people. And I keep my eyes open, and I got a big extended family out there, and the economy is better. I mean, I think we have to be fair. One of the things that I think weakens the right is that everything Obama does is automatically wrong. It's wrong no matter what, from A to Z, how he raises his children, what he eats for breakfast, making faces on YouTube. He can't buy a break. The fact of the matter is he's done a good job with the economy. The economy has bounced back. We've had the longest post-war recovery. I think we've had the longest economic recovery with more jobs being added every month than we've ever had in our history. That's the truth. The failing of this president is his naivete. The fact that he never served in the armed forces may be part of the reason. The fact that he's just instinctively anti-war, that may be part of the reason. The fact that he was raised partially overseas and maybe was oversensitive to local culture in a way that has been detrimental to a vision of the world that is sharper and more focused. Hopefully he will catch up. He was late fighting ISIS. He should have gone after them in June, not in September. The Arab Spring is very, very naive and destructive, ultimately, even to Arabs. I think that we have to be fair. When you talk about what he did right and what he did wrong, you can't just focus on the negative. There is some positive there. It's not helping us very much internationally. And I think the international chaos will have a negative impact, by the way, on former Secretary of State, former Senator Hillary Clinton's run for the White House. I also think that, with all this stuff about Orgy Island and this guy, Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire pedophile, convicted pedophile, the president, Bill Clinton, took a bunch of flights with Jeffrey Epstein. I just wonder if all that Orgy Island stuff isn't going to come back to haunt Hillary as she goes forward. But in any case, we've got chaos on our hands. We need a strong hand at the helm. Hopefully the president has awakened from his stupor, and we will fight ISIS and help Egypt and Jordan and other countries in the region fight ISIS. We'll understand that Assad is the enemy of our enemy. So is Iran the enemy of our enemy. Iran is also fighting ISIS. We got to understand that too. 18 minutes after 11 o'clock, I'm coming back to your calls. Lisa Gibbons, my honorable opponent on Celebrity Apprentice, the big live finale, will be joining us in about 10 minutes. 866-RL, I'll be right back. 26 minutes after 11 o'clock, Lisa Gibbons, my honorable opponent from Celebrity Apprentice, the big live finale tonight, will be joining me in the next segment. What's on your mind? Full board today. People want to talk, and I want to hear you. Here's Mario in New Jersey. Thanks for calling, Mario. What's up?
Hey, Araldo. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. And first, let me state, you are the chief executive of journalism. You stand in a class of your own.
Thank you, brother.
With your peers.
Thank you.
I just want to debate your statements before regarding the economy.
Okay.
And I have to tell you, I don't agree with you. And the only reason I don't agree with you is because being in the business of finance, I'm looking at the global bond market and interest rates. If the economy was improving, how all of the pundits claim, interest rates would be rising much faster than what they are.
That's a great point. Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Why aren't interest rates rising? I mean, why, I used to make 4 or 5% on my savings account. Now, if you have a savings account, you've got to pay money to keep it.
Well, the big problem with that is our Federal Reserve has taken action along with other monetary banks around the world at keeping interest rates low because they have their true pulse on the economy. And, you know, Geraldo, when you have graduates of college graduating with trillions of dollars in debt, you have the federal debt at $18 trillion when GDP is only growing at a very sluggish rate of 2.7%, what happens is if they raise interest rates, they know themselves that they would be causing more harm to growth than actual growth actually taking the baton and moving on its own.
Now, I heard, I was with Charlie Gasparino on Fox Business on Friday, and they revised GDP for the third quarter, and it was 5%, which seemed pretty good to me.
Yeah,
gross national product, gross domestic product.
That's one quarter, Geraldo. If you look year-over-year GDP, which is the real number, and Charlie, I listen to Charlie a lot. I actually met him at a conference one time. Real GDP is not measured on a quarterly basis. That's what allows the Federal Reserve to tweak their interest rate policy. They want to see that continued GDP growth on a quarter-over-quarter basis, and we're not seeing it. And a big part of it is...
So what could the president do? Quick, Mary, what could the president do differently?
Really, it's... I think the constant browbeating of the president is ridiculous on the economy, because if the economy was moving in a good direction, you know what, he'd get credit. If it's moving in a bad direction, he doesn't get credit. The only thing I'd like to see the president do, I'd like to see them work more with Congress and the Senate. I don't like the fact that bills are getting held up, and our three forms of government are not functioning.
That's for sure. You seem like a very sensible guy, Mary. I really appreciate the smart call. It's Vince in New Jersey. What's up, Vince?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I can't let you say what you just said about Obama and the economy either. I'm a fan, and I support you. I like your show, but this is one of the worst economies in history. We had the longest period of stagnant growth, I think, since the Depression. We have 90 million people that aren't working. We have more people on food stamps and government aid than ever before in the history of this country. Gas prices up until 3 months ago.
So what about the economy now? If the economy now is bad, what was it 5-8 years ago?
It was better. Believe me, the only thing that's good now is the stock market.
Isn't that a reflection that our companies are doing well?
No, that's the rich getting richer and everybody else losing. Everybody else is losing money and the rich are getting richer. That's what Obama's all about.
All right, that's Vince. A very solid statement.
Good fight. I think that Lisa and I are evenly matched in every regard. I think that if you want, like, the fight of the year, then we're your match.
I think that Geraldo's experiences may serve him better in the overall 360 of this assignment.
There's Lisa and Geraldo talking on Celebrity Apprentice. I mean, you couldn't have two opponents who have higher regard for the other And I welcome her on board, Lisa Gibbons. We've known each other for decades. Welcome. I love you. And it's been fun, this whole competition. And now it comes down to this nail-biting finish, Lisa.
How are you, my friend? I know the day is a day. It's exciting.
It's been quite an incredible road. I mean, it was taped long ago and then held on the shelf, and then they released it, and it was surprisingly successful, much stronger than anyone expected. Why do you think Celebrity Apprentice came back so strongly this season?
I think it's Hurricane Geraldo.
Did you expect the, you know, you did Dancing with the Stars, but that's different. I've never done any reality, and I never, you know, I always have been a team player. You expect your team to be on one side, you know, and fight the other team. It's different here. It's kind of like every man or woman for themselves.
You know, it's an interesting scenario that I didn't expect either. I truly did have blinders on, and I was able to stay in my lane, which was a unique experience for me. But yes, because the whole goal is to be where we are. I mean, here we are, Geraldo. How cool. And I'm so proud and so excited to be standing shoulder to shoulder with you at the finish line. Somebody will be named the Celebrity Apprentice, but I'm so grateful for the experience. I have loved getting to know you better and seeing your leadership, seeing your competitiveness, which is renowned anyway, but being put together with people that I would have never had a chance to experience.
Absolutely. How about those housewives? I mean, did you ever expect, I mean, Kenya and the stolen cell phone and all that?
Listen, I thought you hit it exactly when you're the first one that said, okay, she needs to take a lie detector test. And Kenya said, apparently she said she would not take a lie detector test. Is that where it stands right now, Geraldo, with PhoneGate?
That's exactly right. And PhoneGate has gone on, and I understand she had something similar happen in the Real Housewives. I mean, that to me symbolized the kind of low down and dirtiness sometimes. But I guess it reflects the ethos of business, or at least the fringes of business. But man, oh man, the backstabbing and the double dealing was quite extraordinary. But on another note, to the upside of this, and Donald Trump does a great job with this, is the money raised for charity, hundreds of thousands of dollars into the millions. Tell everybody what you have been striving for. Lisa Gibbons, my honorable opponent tonight, tell us about your charity.
Well, you're so right. $15 million over the course of this show is a sizable contribution to philanthropic endeavors. I started Lisa's Care Connection in response to my mother and grandmother dying of Alzheimer's disease and our family kind of fumbling through it, just blindly not knowing where to go and what to do and just licking our wounds. So we created a place to connect family caregivers to each other and to the resources they needed to show up and not only survive, but thrive successfully as they help their loved ones navigate this very difficult path.
So mechanically, how does that work? Lisa Gibbons, my guest, how does that work? How does someone, if you suspect they have Alzheimer's or you see them deteriorating in that kind of way, I mean, what do you do? You go to the Lisa's caregivers and you hook them up with some kind of service? How does that work?
Well, whether it's Alzheimer's or whether it's cancer or whether it's Parkinson's, MS, any chronic illness or disease, there's always a caregiver trying to figure out what this means for the family, because it's not just the diagnosed loved ones. It's everyone who really gets sick when someone has a new reality. So the whole family has to adjust to something that's a new normal. So yes, our job is to say, let's help you figure out a plan. Let's find out who needs to be on your team. Let's connect you to the resources in your community. If we can't find them, we're going to help create them so that you can be empowered as you go through this, because it's way too much to walk this path alone.
Now, Joan London has something similar, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. Joan is a very powerful advocate in this space, and I work with a group as well. Now, this is my nonprofit, and I also work with a group called Senior Helpers that helps to provide the in-home care when you say, I need someone to come and be a companion, help with medication, help with food preparation, help with mobility, all of those things. And so I work with that organization as well, and Joan does something similar to that. So we're, you know, both of us have been brought into this through life experience, as have you, with your dog in the hunt for Celebrity Apprentice. And I think that's, you know, that's a lot of passion that, that brought us to this point too, Geraldo.
It absolutely is. Lisa Gibbons is my guest. I'm so proud to be raising money for the developmentally disabled and the severely autistic. We've opened our 40th home now in the whole campaign to deinstitutionalize. Did you see Saturday Night Live on a different note over the weekend, Saturday Night Live's 40th anniversary?
When I get home, I'll be watching.
Okay, but there's a, there was a funny bit. I just saw this funny bit with Sarah Palin saying that she wants to run for president with Donald Trump as her running mate. I thought that she was. I think that Donald should run for president. I just think he has to do it. You know, not just talk about it. He's got to do it.
Well, he's a fascinating character.
Man, what a force of nature he is. Unbelievable.
What a force of nature. And, you know, I think that, that when he takes a new crop of celebrities that show up for this particular slice of his empire, you know, it really does. I mean, he's a change agent. You know, whether you're, you know, pro-Donald or not, he is a change agent.
He definitely is. And he has a great relationship with his children. That was the most impressive thing to me in this whole experience.
Agreed. I think that was so impressive. And, well, you know, it's, I mean, all of us have a mad crush on Ivanka and Don Jr. and Eric. They're just, they work so hard. The work ethic in that family.
It's fantastic.
Dramatic.
So you're nervous?
Am I nervous for tonight?
Yeah.
I have the appropriate butterflies, I think.
me too. I think we're already winners.
The appropriate butterflies, because, you know, you want to be respectful of this moment in time. And, you know, it's a big deal. I'd love to get the money. I know you'd love to get the money. I think we've already done so much good that I want to take a minute to feel proud, and then move forward.
So if you win, I'll buy you a drink. If I win, you buy me one.
You got it. So Erica and your kids are going to be there?
Yeah, Erica and the three girls. The boys are far flung, but the girls are coming in.
That's exciting.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm so excited. We're excited. Erica, my three daughters, it's going to be fun.
Well, then we'll get together with my husband, Steven, and our family that's here, and we'll all toast each other win or lose when it's all over.
You got it. You got it. Lisa Gibbons, great. Good luck tonight. Wonderful being with you, and I'll see you later.
Good luck, Hurricane Geraldo.
Okay, lovely, Lisa. All right, thank you very much. It's going to be fun. Yeah, Mary has been holding on. What's up, Mary? What are you thinking about?
Geraldo, how are you? Geraldo, I just want to tell you something. I'm in the corrugated box business, as you know. I've spoken to you before.
Right. That's a very good indicator of the economy.
I am telling you that we are down 30%. We used to have 30 plants in this area. We have three.
30% from when? From what date?
30 corrugated plants making corrugated boxes for people like Novartis, Campbell Soup. You know, Ford Motor Company, Geraldo, in 1963 had 16 manufacturing facilities in the state of New Jersey. And I'm not talking about the new plant they're building now. Trust me, Geraldo, I know what I'm talking about, okay? We're assembling here. We're not manufacturing here. Chrysler was looking to build a new plant here. They're not forging the frame. They're assembling. All the parts are coming from all over the world.
How much of the corrugated cardboard box company business is obsolete now because of different kinds of packaging and that kind of stuff?
Very. Coca-Cola led the charge. They wanted to go totally corrugated free. We're down, I'm going to say 10% tops as far as people shrink wrapping their.
Right.
I'll give you an idea. Goya Foods, they went from corrugated boxes to a tray with the cans in it, you know, the 24 cans, the vitrellas and all that stuff, and they shrink it.
But yeah, I get it. But Mario, I think that, and I love you and I appreciate your call, but I just think that to blame Obama for the fact that you have shrink wrap now is not appropriate. And, you know, you had 2 weeks ago, you had that jobs report, not even 2 weeks, 1 week ago. You have 51% of all Americans surveyed. I'm not making this up. 51% of all Americans surveyed say the president is handling unemployment well. You have half the respondents say the economy is in good shape. Only 41% said it was that way in December. You know, it's... Americans think things are getting better. I think that, and one of the things about attitude, if you have a positive attitude and a positive, you just look at things and you see the silver lining. And I know it's easy to get down. I know you got this attack in Denmark now. You got this other Jewish guard being killed in Copenhagen of all places, for God's sakes. You have these Christians, Egyptian Christians, being led out in orange jumpsuits onto the beach where they're beheaded. I mean, these savages, these horrible, horrible people. I want you to just hold on to what I said about that positive thought for a minute, though, and have that positive vibe until I come back right after this. ABBA, the winner takes it all. Tonight, the winner will take it all on Celebrity Apprentice on NBC starting at 8 o'clock. Marty told me they promoted it during the big Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary, which was a smash success. The ratings are coming in now for Saturday Night Live. Huge, huge. They guaranteed to the advertisers a 3.8 rating in the key demographic between the ages of 18 and 49. They hit 7.8, so they doubled the anticipated or the guaranteed rating. Everybody was watching it on a frigid night. And tonight, you know, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I never thought a reality show would be important to me. I mean, it's not important in the cosmic sense. I mean, my life, whatever I've done career-wise, whatever I've accomplished, or, you know, the pitfalls or the triumphs, they're established. But it's a nice thing. It's a nice thing. I never thought that I'd be in a competition. It's like they recruited me to run in the Olympics or something at this late age and teach an old dog a new trick or two. But you know what it was more than anything? And I really believe when, you know, to the extent that anyone will look back and analyze this thing, it really was a generational competition in many ways. And it reflected and reflects what's going on in larger society. I mean, with Kevin Jonas and Ian Ziering and Lorenzo, all those guys in their, you know, from their late 20s to their early 50s, you know, that key demo, that 18 to 49 demo, the millennials, most of them. They're trying to get ahead in life. They got to shake off their college loans. They want to compete. But the old baby boomers, and that's the group that I represent, kind of clinging to their positions. You know, it's a different world now. I'm actually writing about it in a kind of autobiographical way, writing about how the world has changed because the baby boomers aren't retiring. I mean, I'm, 71 years old. And I'm still working, but I'm not alone. It's like 15% of my age group is still working. So, 6 years past the retirement age is kind of funky. The result of that is that, the millennials have no room at the top. So it's an interesting phenomenon. You know what I blame it all on? Viagra. See you tomorrow. Good luck.